You're listening to the Courageous Life Podcast, helping you develop courage and resilience in a perilous and unpredictable world. This is your host, Sean Mitzel. I'm coming to you from the mountains of northern Idaho. I'm glad you're with us. In today's Worldview segment, I talk about the national debt and how we have surpassed $18 trillion. And we ironically did it on Black Friday. And for the main segment, I talk about off-grid living, which is basically living without any of the modern conveniences and all of the elements associated with that lifestyle. In today's Worldview segment, I want to talk about our national debt. And the day after Thanksgiving, which is commonly known as Black Friday, is the day when the U.S. national debt exceeded $18 trillion. And it's ironic that the name Black Friday, at least in some cases, indicates the point at which retailers begin to turn a profit, or they're in the black instead of in the red. So it's commonly held that Black Friday, that retailers operate in the red, and then sometime basically once the Christmas season starts, commonly on Black Friday, they are now in the black. Now that's not the only explanation for the name Black Friday, but that is a common one that we see today. But anyway, my point for today is $18 trillion in debt. Now here's the ugly truth. That will never be paid back. Never. And the fact of the matter is that our economy is based on debt and expansion. That's just the truth. Now, I don't have enough time to go into all of that, nor go into currency creation or how the government, what's the process of printing money and adding to the money supply. And all of those are very important issues and topics, but we require much more time. But the fact of the matter is that we did exceed $18 trillion in debt. Now, it's amazing when you think about it, that it took us 205 years to get to $1 trillion, and that was right around 1980. I don't remember the exact date, but it was either 80 or 81. And then another, 32 or 33 years to add another $17 trillion. Okay, and then we have to be careful, too, because this is not an Obama problem. This has been a consistent problem, really, ever since that we decoupled ourselves from the gold standard. And the gold standard, and that happened completely in 1971. There were some partial decouplings prior to that, but in 1971, Nixon actually totally decoupled the currency from the gold standard. And then there was nothing holding back government from continuing to spend. There was nothing holding back their budgets. Just like today, we deficit spend every single year, and we have done so. What seems to be indefinitely and in the future looks to be indefinitely. In fact, the CBO, that's the Congressional Budget Office, predicts that deficits are going to get even worse. This year was actually a pretty good year in that it was only a half of $1 trillion in a deficit. In other words, the government spent a half a trillion more than it brought in with no thought, there's no panic in Washington, we need to have an emergency meeting to figure out our budgets to balance. There's nothing like that. So, this CBO report predicts that the deficits will increase from now until 2021. And this is based on the CBO's baseline scenario. And if you know anything about the CBO, they usually come out with three scenarios. Baseline, this is exactly what they think is going to happen. A worst case scenario, and then something that's better than what they expected. So they come up with these kind of three scenarios. So this is the baseline, meaning that if everything goes according to plan, we're not involved, we haven't started financing any more wars, the economy has avoided recession, the stock market has not imploded, that we will still increase our deficit spending through 2021. What's going to happen after that? I don't know, but most likely more deficit spending. So to take a look at this, I want to just cover, and you've probably seen this happen multiple times, where you take that comparison of that spending by the government and then bring it down to the family level. And so if we take a look at a typical family, median income, $52,000. Now, if this family budgeted like the federal government, it would have spent $60,000, $60,000 and change. They'd put another $8,400 on their credit card, and this family would also already have racked up more than $308,000 on their credit card. Okay, and that's not with a lot of assets. That's not talking about a mortgage with having, you know, property and everything else. That's basically credit card debt. Okay, so that's a comparison to the federal budget. So it's not good. It's, in fact, it's unsustainable. And almost every expert economist will admit that it is unsustainable. Yet we continue to do it. And there was also some parlor tricks that occurred this year. So yeah, we only had a half of $1 trillion in deficit spending, but there was some other tricks that occurred with borrowing additional money to pay off other debt that was due. Bottom line is this, the debt burden is reaching very dangerous levels, unsustainable levels, perhaps beyond the tipping point levels. If you use this ratio, the debt to GDP ratio, we're at over 100%. Okay, so the size of our economy is less than the size of our debt. All right, so that's not good at all. This is not even considering what a lot of people would consider, you know, our true U.S. debt, which is much higher, and that's based on basically future promises. The future promises of fulfilling all of the entitlement promises that we've made or that the government has made and agreed to pay out. That number would be way higher. And in fact, most businesses that have to they do their accounting would have to account for that as well. And so that number is closer to $60 trillion today. But, you know, they're the government, so they don't have to count it that way. So there's one more number that I want to give you. And this comes from Professor Steve Keen. And he is an economist, and he says, history shows the two factors that best predict an economic crisis, that they are private debt exceeding 150% of GDP, and that ratio rising by 17 percentage points or more over 5 years. All right, now, so in the recent economic crisis in 2008, private debt was all the way up to 170%. And that's private debt to GDP was 170%. Today, 2014, we're back to 145% and growing. Okay, and that's the important point there. And at a rate of approximately 5% a year. So that would, again, put us right at that danger zone next year. All right, so that is not like a predictor, and that's not saying, oh, when that happens, obviously, we go into this economic crisis. That's not saying that's going to happen. It's saying, hey, historically, when we look at these numbers, when that happens, or this, then we go into economic crisis. Okay, so we're at that level once again. You know, and you can look around, look at, you know, the banks are starting to ease up on lending. They're starting to change their underwriting processes again. Starting to lend out money a little bit more freely to people that may not be able to pay it back. We're doing the same thing. We're repeating the same mistakes over and over again. And again, I find it ironic that this occurred on Black Friday. So with that, some final thoughts. The fact that we removed ourselves from the gold standard basically took the gloves off and allowed budgeting to go wild and crazy. I would love to see an actual balanced budget amendment. Then you have to also understand this, that money is nothing more, or I should say currency, is nothing more than a confidence contract. As soon as we went off that gold standard, we started engaging in what we call fiat currency. And that's just the fact that that dollar bill that you have in front of you, it is only worth $1 because we all agree that it's worth $1. Obviously, it has the backing of the U.S. government, but the bottom line is it's based on confidence. And if that confidence goes away, that dollar goes away. So you have to understand that. Again, money creation, how the federal government does this, that's an entire series of podcasts on its own, with fractional reserve banking and the Federal Reserve and you know, money printing, all this. And as our economy is a debt-based economy, we will always continue to have these types of problems. We will cycle through these problems. We will continue to deficit spend because, again, everything is based on debt and growth. And so every time that we have even a hint of recession, what does the government do every single time? They just flood the market with easy money, whether it's printed or, you know, well, all of these steps through banks, through fractional reserve banking, through money lending, through debt. That's the bottom line. My takeaway from all this is stop participating in it. I'm not saying stop participating in using dollars, for example, but stop participating in this debt-based society. For today's main topic, I want to talk about off-grid living. And for the last couple of weeks, I've hit on this topic of self-sufficiency in different ways, whether it was directly addressing it. We did a couple podcasts on that. We addressed, you know, when to do things yourself versus having other people do them for you, whether it's to build skills or you're going to save money. We talked about self-sufficiency as a spectrum or a linear scale, because it's not all or nothing. You're not either totally dependent or totally self-sufficient. You know, this is a scale. It really is, because to some degree, we're all dependent either on others or whether it's the system or the grid, what have you. But if you think of this linear scale, once again, on the far left side, that's occupied by the glossy-eyed, the blank-stared zombie consumer that's standing on the corporate conveyor belt of life. Okay, and on the far right side is the person who completely rejects modern conveniences, or I shouldn't even say modern convenience, I should say on the grid living, whether it's you're tied into the grid or even if you're off the grid but you replace the grid with your own energy. Okay, this person totally rejects that either totally or partially. So that's kind of the lay down. And what I want to talk about today is that far right side and some of the reasons why people do it. There's many reasons why somebody would want to, say, live completely off of the grid. And I think the scale of it, the person who wants to live completely off grid would go all the way from someone who is, say, a hardcore survivalist who thinks that this is what's going to happen anyway, and so now I'm going to train and live this way in order to survive when it does happen, by whatever means, whether it's societal collapse or an EMP or a solar flare that causes a total grid down situation, all the way to the person who rejects modern conveniences or technology. Maybe they feel that it's evil, or just maybe they feel that there's too many bad influences associated with technology, you know, and then everything in between. So that's what I want to address today, is some of the reasons why people want to live off grid. Now, full disclosure, that's we are not driving towards living off grid here. We're not. Like I've said before in other podcasts, we want to be, and when you think about that spectrum, we want to be further to the right, not even center of that thing. We want to be further to the right. So I would like to get to a point where we are off grid, but I'm not necessarily rejecting all modern conveniences or even power. I would like to generate that power myself, but I would, you know, I think it's wise use of resources and talents and abilities to be able to use power to be more productive. So, but I do think there's a lot to learn from just taking a look at the off grid person. You know, whether that is from a theoretical standpoint, or it does make you think about a lot of different things. When you really break this down and look at this, it is an interesting thought experiment or exercise to talk about. So let's start with that off-grid person who is the hardcore survivalist. This person feels like, hey, we're going to have to live this way anyway, and I need to do it now in order to survive. Because those that are quote-unquote prepared to live off-grid, if that time comes, won't be able to do it. Okay, so this is the mindset. And, there's some credence to this. You know, do we tend to think about things and go, oh, yeah, well, if X happens, well, then my backup plan is Y. Do we really think through to see if Y would actually work? Okay, so there's no harm in looking at this. And so let's take a scenario that this hardcore survivalist would look at that would drive them to live off-grid. And I'm talking about the hardcore survivalist that does this all the time, not the hardcore survivalist that plans to do this and says, oh, I will do that. Okay, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the person who lives this way. All right, so if you think about a solar flare or an EMP, like the Carrington event, or whether it's a bad actor who detonates a nuclear weapon high in the sky, up at altitude, and it causes what experts say it would cause, which would be a large-scale grid-down situation, massive electronic components out. And with that comes lack of refrigeration, lack of power in general, but of course lack of refrigeration. Vehicles are no longer running, not so much because they can't get gas, but the electronic components fail, or even in the gas pumps in stations aren't working. So it's not a lack of fuel, but the lack of the ability to distribute it and use it. So that's the type of event I'm talking about. And this sounds really kooky. It sounds far-fetched, very unlikely. And maybe it is unlikely. Hopefully it's unlikely. But it's really interesting because it's not what most people would consider the tinfoil hat people talking about this. Lots of people are talking about this, to include the former CIA director, Woolsey. And he actually recently testified in Congress about this very scenario. And he used specifically the nuclear blast triggered electromagnetic pulse, and that it would take down the U.S. power grid because of specific vulnerabilities that we have, mainly with power stations and the ability to replace transformers and components like that. And he said it would lead to massive starvation and death, mainly because, again, you're losing your food supply, you're losing transportation. Now, he says that he predicts that 2/3 of the United States, of the population, would perish from starvation, disease, and societal breakdown. Now, that is just astronomical. I mean, think about that. That is over 200 million people. Now, other experts estimate even higher numbers, but I mean, that just seems just outrageous. It seems just crazy to me. But is it crazy? I don't know. I mean, it sounds very, very unlikely to happen. And in fact, that's what a lot of counter, quote unquote, experts have said. It's like, we agree that it would be hugely devastating if that were to occur. And it could cause a long-term grid-down situation, especially in a lot of areas, not necessarily in all areas, but a lot of death, no doubt about it. They say that the event is so unlikely that it's just fear-mongering to even talk about it. But this is what the former CIA director said. In fact, I've met him while I was in the Command and Staff College in the Marine Corps. Myself and about a dozen other Marine officers sat down with him. We were able to do that. He obviously was not the CIA director at the time. I think he was in the 90s with Clinton. But we talked about things like the Arab Spring at the time. That was, I remember this specifically because this was right during that time, and it was interesting because our president at that time, Obama, was supporting the Arab Spring. It was basically the attitude of, hey, we're all Egyptians now. And I remember very clearly he was thinking that we need to be very careful on what we're asking for and what we're supporting, because we don't know what's going to be put in place. And that has since been proven correct. I mean, it's a regime that persecutes Christians. It's a terrible regime, and we were foolish to be supporting that at the time. Same with now. But anyway, I digress, and perhaps maybe that's why we have what we have today, where chaplains aren't allowed to share their faith, and how everybody in the United States can do whatever they want. In fact, everyone will do what is right in their own eyes, except Christians. You guys, you need to lock it up and go lock yourself in a corner. But everything else goes, all good. Anyway, back to what I was talking about. The EMP, is it likely? No, it's not likely. But if it did happen, it would be devastating. I think everybody pretty much agrees on that looks at this. And in fact, there's been some research done on the Carrington event, and that was that 1898 event from a solar flare that played havoc on telegraph lines. And of course, we didn't have a whole lot of electronic infrastructure at that time, very little, in fact. But it caused massive havoc with that, and so a lot of people have tried to predict if that event happened now in 2014, what would happen. And it would be devastating. It would be devastating. And that was, that can occur, and it probably does occur every so often. So anyway, there are some things being done in government to try and harden our electrical grid, to be able to make these transformers more able to absorb something like an EMP, because that's what it is. A lot of people will say, hey, well, I'm good, I've got solar panels, but it's the electronic components and the inverters and things like that would fail, and it would render solar panels useless. Unless maybe you have a backup that you've got in some EMP safe container, like a Faraday cage or whatever. So, again, this is for this person who believes that something like this is possible, even likely. And that's the reason why they go off grid. They do it as somebody who says, well, for those that think they're going to transition to off grid living and be successful and survive are foolish. Very few of them will. So they choose to live that way now. Okay, so that's one end of the spectrum. Okay, moving to the far right, where the person who says basically technology is evil, and therefore we should reject all technology, all modern conveniences, because nothing good comes from it. Okay, this would be the Luddite, who again rejected technology. This person was somebody who had even become violent trying to destroy manufacturing plants because it diminished employment and it hindered the ability of a person to be able to make a living. The Amish, they express themselves through group norms. They're at odds with individualism that we find in American culture. And so they believe that there is an anti-individualist orientation. And that's part of their motive for rejecting labor-saving technologies. It would make them less dependent on the community. So they're, in a way, they're collectivists. Okay, not in the communist sense where the state controls all, but as a community, they're collective in nature. And so modern innovations like electricity, that might spark competition and status and undue influence. That doesn't mean that they reject all technology, but much of it they do. It really comes down to they have a lot of rules when it comes to electricity and transportation. So for example, since public electric and utility lines are somehow connected to the outside, the use of power generated from them is forbidden. What they're mainly trying to prevent is the influences from the outside. So think of television, etc. So things like radios, TVs, and appliances obviously would be forbidden in their community, but oddly enough, they do would accept a 12-volt self-contained battery to power something. So that would be okay. They use they'll use hydraulic type powered motors and some other things. So I don't know exactly how they derive all their lists of do's and don'ts, but some things are allowed, some things are not. So they might use bottled gas to operate a refrigerator, for example. And transportation, same thing. They prefer the slower pace of the horse and the trolley, and they forbid a motorized vehicle as far as owning, driving, but not being a passenger. So you can accept rides from neighbors. All right. So anyway, the bottom line though is that the Amish believe that they reject modern conveniences, and for the most part, all electricity. And kind of talking about the grid here. They reject that because of the undue influence they believe it'll bring to their community, and their emphasis on collectivism versus individualism. And so that's why they do it. And I think an important part of this discussion is related to dependency. Because when we were talking about off-grid living, what we're really talking about is for whatever reason, doesn't matter, again, if it's we're talking about the hardcore survivalist or the Amish and the Luddite, there is this perceived, or maybe true, dependency on modern technology. And there certainly is, and certainly to some degree. I think that everybody would agree if they couldn't go to Walmart or Costco or Safeway to go get their food, they'd be in trouble pretty quick. Everybody agrees on that. If we could no longer use vehicles to get around, we'd be in trouble really quick. If we didn't have freezers and refrigerators, we'd be in trouble. If we didn't have water being piped in, we'd be in trouble. Okay, so there is to some degree a dependency, but that stuff has become very reliable, and so that's why people use it. So it's not hard to understand why people have become so dependent on the grid. I just call it the grid in general, because it is reliable. But this off-grid idea addresses directly the idea of dependency, which is the opposite of independence. There are those who have declared war on oil and so-called fossil fuels, and that insist that, hey, electricity is the answer, and that, we can just apply this solution, and then we'll be good. And for many, even we talk about this hardcore survivalist, the prepper, the off-grid folks, at the same time that they will scoff at the electrical grid, they replace that system with the same thing, just from a different source. And they'll say, hey, now look at me, I'm good. Or they'll drive an electric car, not realizing that when they plug in, they're getting the same stuff from fossil fuels anyway. Now, there's no doubt that person who is, let's say, off-grid but still using all the same modern conveniences as the person who is on the grid is more self-sufficient. is more resilient. Now, in a worst-case scenario, they might not be as well off as someone who's been living off-grid. But I want to be fair. Let's look at the off-grid people objectively as well. For most of them, they have the benefit of living in modern society where rampant pandemic and disease is not widespread. You know, mortality is generally not a major problem like it was, say, 500 years ago, where people really celebrated birthdays. I mean, if you got to age 30 or 40, you were doing really well, and the infant mortality rates were very high. And so there are some modern advantages, and not that it's a bad thing, but if somebody wants to live completely off the grid, completely off electricity, more power to them. And in fact, there's probably a lot of benefits to that. They don't have to worry about paying an electrical bill, nor do they have to worry about replacing batteries for their solar system every few years, or expensive equipment. So they live a simpler life, and it requires less. And as long as they have all the skills necessary and they're willing to live simply, you can do it. But there's also the reality of taxes. You're not going to get away from taxes. Even if you own outright a piece of property, let's say you own 5 acres out in the middle of nowhere, and you are able to live very simply with no electricity, no alternative energy sources. You're just out there and you're living and you're not having any issues. You still have property taxes, which I don't agree with. Somebody should be able to pay off their property, live out there if they so choose and they want to live off the land. They should be able to do that. But you can't. And we're kind of forced in our society to earn income to some degree, which I don't agree with, but that's the system we live in. To address that system is another thing entirely. But this, getting back to this problem of dependency. Now, they're onto something there with our dependency, with all of the undue influences that come from that dependency. But they come up with this alternative option, which is to live off-grid. I mean, and their argument is, hey, for centuries, for millennia, mankind has lived and thrived without any kind of power grid. And that is true, but you got to take into account that, 500 years ago, people didn't live as long. There was a lot more disease, and a lot of those basic issues like hygiene, but infant mortality was high. We didn't have modern medicine. We didn't have the ability to provide life-saving surgeries that we do today. And although I'm not a fan at all of our modern medical system, which is nothing more than pushing pills, great at patching people together, great at performing surgeries, great at dealing with people who are, say, diabetic or having issues like that, great at that, life-saving, wonderful things. But we carry over this, there's a pill for everything, for any kind of problem. And at disease prevention and things, the modern medical system is terrible. We don't address the root causes. We address symptoms for the most part. And I'm generalizing here. And it tends to be true in our medical system. But of course, there's many exceptions to that. So anyway, this alternative is proven over thousands of years. Just like some domesticated animals are great examples as well. A lot of them now could not survive just based on forage and browse. They require our attention, and that's fine. But You know, wild pigs and that are still out there in the swamp do just fine. Wild animal, you know, white-tailed deer do just fine. And mankind, humans, did just fine without the electrical grid, even though the dependence is so high that many people would not survive without it. You know, if it was on a wide scale. And we see the destruction in small, tiny microcosms of that via natural disaster, where people are struggling big time, and you're talking like, you know, a tiny percentile of the nation is undergoing this type of disaster, and people are dying. They're descending into criminal activity immediately. Government struggles to help. So, on a wide scale. And things like that would be terrible. So they what these people would say, and again, I'm mainly speaking to not so much people like the Amish who have, you know, this is their culture, their community, and they have lived this way, you know, for hundreds of years. But more so to that other person that's either the hardcore survivalist or say someone who is really wanting to break from the dependency, and I understand that, I really do. So, is abandoning the grid possible? Absolutely, it is possible. Now, for those of us that don't desire to do that fully, it doesn't mean that we don't understand this idea of dependency. It doesn't mean that we don't want to become independent. And I do want to kind of back off from that dependency because I recognize that it's there, and hopefully you do too, and that we become much less dependent on the system. And it's not, again, not just the power grid or electrical devices, you know, that really increase our productivity. I think those are good things. But if we're totally dependent on the system, that's not a good thing. And I think, you know, even for the hardcore off-grid person, they'd have to admit that any steps away from total dependency on the grid is a good thing and helps us to become more independent, self-sufficient, and resilient in our lives. So those are all good. So stepping out on that journey of going off-grid, even though, like I said in the beginning, we don't have necessarily a desire to do that. We definitely have a desire to move closer to that direction. But we can learn from the off-grid person many valuable lessons. And I think one of the main ones is dependency. That we are all dependent on the system, at least to some degree, and that it would be good for us to move towards independence. That's a good thing. Finally, I want to leave you with this. And even though many people would outright reject the idea of living off-grid, just as a thought experiment, just as an intellectual exercise, just think through it for a minute. Could you go for, say, 3 days without any grid, you know, without any electricity, with no ability for modern conveniences? Could you do it? Not do you want to, could you? And minus the ability to run to the local store and get ice, run to the local store and buy food, could you do it? Just think through that. It's an interesting exercise, and it helps us to think through whether we are resilient in our lives. And then if that's a breeze for you, it's simple. Think through it a little harder than that. Think through a couple weeks. Think through a month. Could you do it? It's just an interesting exercise of a fun thing, honestly, to talk about with a group of friends. You know, what would you do? What could you do? And Billy, how would you respond? And all of these are great just exercises in thinking through some of these issues. Our scripture for today comes from 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 8. But if anyone does not provide for his relatives, and especially for members of his household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. This concludes today's podcast. Thanks for listening. Please visit us on our website, thecourageouslifepodcast.com. We'd appreciate any comments or questions that you have. And also like us on Facebook, The Courageous Life Podcast. Semper Fidelis and Soli Deo Gloria.